This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman. And you're listening to the DCAU Review, hosted by Cal and Liam, streaming at DCAUReview.com and on your favorite podcast app.
On the mean streets of Gotham City, a new breed of supervillains emerges. But deep in the shadows, old school justice awaits.
I'm the Batman.
The Caped Crusader returns in an all-new animated series. The Batman. You won't even see it coming.
This is it.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 280 of the DCAU Review. I am one of your hosts, and Cal, and with me, my good friend, good brother, the man that runs our social media account. He's feeling a little bit under the weather, but he's playing through the pain. It's Liam. Liam, welcome to episode 280 of the DCAU Review. Last week, we had our DCAU Character Spotlight episode featuring John Jones, a.k.a. The Martian Manhunter. And with this being the fifth Saturday of the month, that, of course, means we are taking a trip around the multiverse and checking out some Elseworlds tales. And since we were already talking about the Justice League this month, we were talking about Martian Manhunter, we figured, hey, why not check out an alternate version of the Manhunter from Mars? And we found one, and we will be checking it out this week on a familiar, but I think not too familiar. We haven't reviewed too many episodes of it, an underappreciated series as we visit a different Elseworld this week.
That's right. So we have another episode of The Batman to review this week. And this was really, as we'll get to, this is this show's first steps into the larger DC universe as a whole, as it's basically just we had been confined to just the Gotham City cast of characters of heroes and villains. But as we'll get to here, this is the first step into a much larger world, to mix my nerd metaphors here.
Indeed. There we go. And of course, before we get into breaking down, we are just reviewing part one of The Joining this week, and we will be tackling part two next week. Mm-hmm. So we're splitting up the two parts. We're evening things out here. We'll give some scores for our opinions on this episode, but our final scores, our general overall category scores, will be figured out next week. Not necessarily balanced out between our two scores. It won't be an exact average of our scores for each part, but we'll figure out final scores next week. But we will provide our general scores this week for this episode at least. And of course, before we get into our breakdown of this episode, we will of course get the official IMDb synopsis for this week's episode, which is brought to you by, as it always is, The Pod Tower. Head over to youtube.com/The Pod Tower today. We invite you to subscribe, especially if you are a fan of DC animation and podcasts that discuss DC animation, specifically the DC animated universe. That's probably why you're listening to this podcast. But there's some great content there from the folks at Tim Talk. Their entire podcast library is there, as well as the Jump on the Batwagon podcast from the fine folks at Watchtower Database, as well as our entire catalog, all available in one streaming convenient place on YouTube. Head over to youtube.com/The Pod Tower and subscribe today.
That's right. So this is the synopsis for The Joining Part 1, which is written by Jane Espenson and Doug Petrie, directed by Anthony Chun, with music by Thomas Chase and animation by Dong Wu. And that synopsis reads as such. John Jones, a new officer in Gotham, claims to know the true identity of Batman. Batman must learn whether the officer is an ally or not.
I don't think they quite covered.
I'll say two things. One, I barely had to do the voice this week because I'm my face is full of snot. And two, that's not really what happens.
It is a small portion of what happens, but it certainly is not the lead. They buried the lead significantly. I would say incomplete. This gets an incomplete grade from me.
Agreed.
Not the finest. This episode, by the way, originally airing here in the States on the Kids WB back on April the 28th, 2007, meaning we are coming up here on the 16-year anniversary of this episode's original air date. So, Liam, we get into the episode, we open things up and we see... I don't think we've covered too many episodes. We have covered the Robin episode. So we've seen the episode with Robin being introduced. I don't recall too many episodes, if any, that we've covered that involved Batgirl being introduced. She got introduced during the fourth season or third season of this series.
Correct. Yes. A trivia note for those. Actually, they introduced Batgirl first on this show because at the time, Robin was tied up in the Teen Titans animated series. And as we've talked about over the years, DC is and Warner Brothers are kind of a little stingy about letting characters appear in multiple series that are running concurrently, as we've talked about with things like the Bat-Villain embargo and things like that over the years. So Robin kind of a victim of that. But it did give this series a chance to spotlight Batgirl a little bit more before bringing Robin in this.
That's right. The episode, so we do see that that Batgirl will be an important part of this episode, as will Robin. But we open things up at a Wayne Technology warehouse where they're creating some brand new forms of technology. And we get introduced to Morgan Freeman. I mean, Lucius Fox. Who this is apparently his first appearance in this series as well. And he does visually, well, we can mention that and maybe talk a little bit more later in visuals, but does visually appear to look like they based him on his appearances in the Nolanverse, which would have been happening right in or around this time.
I was gonna say, yeah, smack dab in the middle of that.
So maybe some corporate synergy. Maybe there's a mandate similar to the mandates that were done for the Batman the Animated Series to make this character ring true to the live action version. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it was just the writers and the directors were big fans of the Nolanverse, which, quite frankly, who isn't? But yes, Lucius Fox is introduced. Not only is he the technological guru and working hands-on at in Wayne Tech development, but we learn very quickly that he actually is well aware, just as he is in the Nolanverse, that Bruce Wayne is Batman. Well, I guess in the Nolanverse, he doesn't ever explicitly come out. It's like he knows, but doesn't want to say that he knows. And he and Bruce just sort of acknowledge that he is Batman without acknowledging it verbally. Here it's clear as day. He makes it very clear, young Dick Grayson, that he is aware of his dual identity as both Batman and Robin. And after Robin tries to make some convenient excuses, Bruce fully admits it in front of him to Lucius that, of course, that he is Batman and that Lucius is well aware, as they kind of review whatever technology is being worked on here, this project at the Wayne Technology.
You have a great view from your office, Mr. Fox.
Call me Lucius. And I agree. I never get tired of watching the process.
Everyone working together like that. All those people. It's like a giant machine.
More like an efficient team. One Bruce hardly needs to worry about. It's what makes the other part of his life possible.
You mean the other part of his life in which he appears at museum dedications and fashion shows?
I mean fighting crime.
You mean fighting crimes of fashion?
Dick, he knows I'm the Batman.
I was a close friend of Bruce's father. After the tragedy, I was happy to offer what little help I could.
It was more than a little. Lucius helped construct the Batcave.
And on the rare occasions he lets me, I get to lend a hand with some of the Bat gadgets. I do love tinkering with the Bat's shadow tech.
Oh, well then, yay. So we're just throwing around words that start with Bat now. That's fine.
Lucius, you clearly have the factory running as smoothly as ever. I don't know why I even bother with these visits.
Maybe you just come by to see an old friend.
Doesn't sound like me.
And as they're leaving, Robin, sort of taken aback, asking Bruce if there's a list of other people that he needs to know about that knows Bruce's identity. And Bruce mentions in an offhand comment that he tries to keep his circle close. He doesn't like relying on the help of others. Put that one in your cap and for a or put it on the back burner and think about that as we go along here in the episode. But they're really setting up Batman to have this second guessing as to whether or not he trusts or needs others' help as he goes along here. So as we get this back and forth between the two of them, we cut back to inside of the Wayne Enterprises Technology Center, and wouldn't you know it, a strange figure enters, and we kind of only see it from Lucius's we only see Lucius reacting to it, but somebody has entered that is not permitted to be in that area. He's shocked, he gets attacked, and then replacing him is someone that looks just like Lucius. So we're left with a bit of a cliffhanger there as to just what exactly is going on. So we next cut to the Gotham City docks, where Robin and Batgirl appear to be on a stakeout, observing some standard looking bad guys who are unloading a shipment from a ship. They're up to no good. They believe they're up to no good. And before they can kind of observe just exactly what is going on, Robin and Batgirl jump into action, taking down some of the villains and quickly actually getting overpowered. But thankfully, Batman is there to swoop in and save the day. But he's very quick to point out that they rushed headstrong in. He's not too happy about it. He wanted to kind of lay low and find out if they could get more information about what was going on, what type of work that they were doing, what they were up to specifically. But instead, they have to kind of play guesswork at this point and work with the police. Robin and Batgirl are kind of dejected and feel like, maybe they've been read the riot act and aren't too happy with regards to Bruce's comment about maybe it would be better off if he started working alone.
Guess they weren't so ordinary after all.
Maybe they were those super strong zombie thugs.
We would have had them if you'd waited.
Look, I know being a costume crime fighter means never having to say I'm sorry.
But, yeah, we're sorry.
No, it's my fault. Maybe I've been relying on you two more than I should. This never happened when I worked alone.
So we get a cut to the next scene as we see there was a net full of cargo that was dropped nearly on Robin, Batgirl, and Batman, which allowed some of the villains to escape. Batman is standing there talking with a brand new detective who's wearing a nice fedora and long jacket, a detective John Jones, who's discussing with Batman the Wayne Industries crates that were there, and saying that they would like to investigate further as to what just was in the crates, but they needed to get additional information from Bruce Wayne. Batman says that he thinks he can probably get their his permission, and John sort of knowingly says, "Yes, I'm sure you can," as he walks away and disappears into the mist. But that kind of leaves Batman kind of stroking his chin also, as he doesn't quite, hasn't had the opportunity to work with this detective John Jones. And he does manage to take one of the items back to the Batcave with him, where he and Robin and Batgirl kind of begin their attempt to figure out just what's in the box, as someone famously once said in a movie. And while Batman himself tries to do a little digging to figure out just who this Detective John Jones is.
It's a new project. Wayne Tech Research really paid off this time. We've developed whole new metals, hybrids. It's pretty exciting if you're into metallurgy. That's the reason for the extra shipping.
I thought that project was still at the development stage.
It is, but the development is requiring some supplies. Really, there's nothing you need to worry about.
You should have those crates sent back here unopened.
Send them back unopened. I see. Well, thank you. Keep working. Commissioner Gordon vouched for Detective Jones, and his records from Denver check out. But there's nothing before Denver, like he didn't exist.
Hey!
He calls Lucius from the Batcave, looking to see if Lucius can shine any light, of course not realizing that Lucius has already been replaced by a mysterious imposter. And Lucius tells him nothing to worry about, and you should send all the crates back unopened.
I love that. Yes, just send them back. Don't bother opening them. Don't look inside the box. Just send them to me.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. It's like the most suspicious way.
Yep.
It's like that scene in Attack of the Clones where Obi-Wan finds Jango Fett on the Clone World, and like in the middle of their conversation when they're like 2 feet apart, he like says something to little Boba Fett to close the closet door.
Right.
And you just see the Jango Fett armor sitting in the closet.
Right.
Obi-Wan clearly sees it. He's like, at this point, why are we bothering? Like,
right. Why keep up the charade at all?
But yes, regardless, Robin and Batgirl open the crate and find a little very alien looking technology, which they quickly figure out is some sort of hoverboard. It's clearly not from this Earth. And so Batman decides he's going to go out and find this Detective Jones, who seemed to know a little bit more about this scenario than he was letting on.
Not only was he not letting on, but as he did the research, he also was like simultaneously doing research on Detective Jones to see if he could dig up some of his past. He mentions that now Commissioner, I don't think we've gotten to the point in the series or reviewed an episode before, perhaps, where he was elevated to Commissioner status, but Jim Gordon is now Commissioner of Gotham, and he vouched for Detective Jones, but the research that Batman did only led him to a past in Colorado, and there was nothing else before. He mentions it's as if he never existed before then.
That's right. This is actually part of the episode that I had certainly forgotten. It's been several years since I'd seen this one. But that all you really know, like you don't necessarily realize that there are robots yet, mm-hmm. as we'll get to. So all you know is there's somebody that looks like other people that is replacing humans. And you're like, okay. So if you didn't know, obviously, if you know the comics and you know Detective John Jones is the alias of superhero Martian Manhunter.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes sense. But at this point in the story, if you look at this with completely fresh eyes, it does feel like you're setting up this mysterious detective to actually be the bad guy.
Yeah.
Which I think is pretty neat, or at least in on it in some way.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. That's it. That was an interesting plot device for sure.
Yeah. So and that's the side of Batman decides he's gonna go pay a visit to this Detective Jones and remarks that he's going to do it alone, as he keeps kind of making little remarks that he's kind of grown frustrated with his partner, seemingly, and that he didn't have all of these issues before when he worked alone before this. So he doesn't want to have to rely on too many additional partners, it seems. So as he goes into John Jones's apartment, he comes across what seems like a normal apartment. He hears a television on in the next room, and he slowly opens the door, and we get a scene that's directly taken from the Darwin Cook Justice League New Frontier mm-hmm. comic. Brilliant scene as John Jones is watching television, and every time the channel changes and a new face appears, so does the the face of the person in the chair change as we see John practicing his shape shifting, seemingly. And finally, he notices Batman in the room, and it becomes very clear that the jig is up, so to speak. And he then reveals his form as the Martian Manhunter. And Batman, being not exactly the most trusting guy, immediately slaps the cuffs on him, which I think is incredibly funny. You've just seen this guy change shape like 10 times, and we're just going to throw handcuffs on him. But of course, John, not too happy about that idea, quickly removes the cuffs and decides that he's not sure he can trust Batman either. And so the chase is on. The fisticuffs are on. As we get a, we'll talk about this more in visuals, I'm sure, but the next few minutes of Jean sort of chasing or getting chased by Batman through various modes, first on the ground, and then after he flies away, we find out that we see the incursion of the Batplane, which is a TIE fighter in this show.
Me too.
So, we get a very fun chase scene. We'll talk about that in visuals, but eventually he's able to kind of ground the Martian long enough for them to have a conversation, and they take it to where else but a local diner to finally have it out. And we get the origins not only of John, but of what exactly is coming their way.
Thanks. So, alien.
All my life.
Telekinesis. Neat party trick. How heavy can the object be?
I could lift you and your best friend. That is, if you have one.
You miss being back home on Mars?
I never said I was Martian.
Never had to. Martians hate fire.
How do you know anything about Martians?
I've dedicated my life to studying all fields of knowledge, no matter how obscure, including thousands of years of recorded human encounters with extraterrestrials, the Mayans, ancient Egyptians, crop circles. I could teach a college course on Martians, except I always filed them away under urban legends.
Like alligators in the sewers.
I fought them too. Why'd you run?
You might have exposed me, turned me over to the authorities. I can't allow that, not now.
Guess we both guard our secrets fiercely.
Batman, through all the dialogue that they have, which to normal people, I don't know. The dialogue in this scene reminded me something straight out of Batman 66.
Absolutely.
Just the innate nature that Batman has to uncover little hints and clues. And we learn that Batman is an expert on Martians.
Mm-hmm.
having
course on them, he says.
That's right. He could teach a course. He had, now, while previously he had chalked it up to urban legends. Now, of course, I guess you could look at this in two ways. I'm pretty sure that in the timeline for the Batman show at this point, he's already fought Dracula at some point.
True.
He's fought, as he mentions in the dialogue, he's fought living crocodile men. He's fought Clayface. So it's not as if he hasn't had interactions with odd, strange, or weird characters. So I guess chalking something up to an urban legend almost sounds like he's stupid, makes him stupid. But then you follow that up with an immediate comment where he talks about how he's an expert on Martians. He knows that Jean, it must be a Martian. Jean doesn't confirm and says that he never said that he was a Martian, but Batman deduces by the fact that Jean has side-eyed towards a grill that is happening, or a grill that's turned on in the diner. That he must be afraid of fire, and therefore fire is a huge vulnerability based on all of the research that he's done of crop circles and Aztecs. And he throws some other like rando mumbo jumbo in their UFO studies that he's done that he must be a Martian. And Jean doesn't deny at this point, but they sort of do the full breakdown here. Jean reveals that he's well aware that Bruce Wayne is Batman, and he deduced it by reading his mind. Batman then goes on to show that not only can prove that Jean can read minds, but also that Batman is able to manipulate his thoughts to create a thought that actually blocks what he's actually thinking about, that conjures up an image so he can block Jean's mind reading, which I'm sure will probably have something to do in
So how'd you figure out Batman was Bruce Wayne?
Read your mind.
Hmm.
Something wrong?
No, it's just... that's cheating. Read my mind now.
What?
You heard me.
You're thinking of a dog you owned as a boy.
Location of the Batcave.
I distinctly saw...
a mental image I conjured up to block my real thoughts. Trick I picked up from some Tibetan monks.
Anyone ever tell you you're a little paranoid?
My partners, all the time.
I'm stunned. You have partners?
I do. Though sometimes I wonder if things might be easier without them.
You may need all the help you can get with what's coming. And I've done my homework, Bruce. It is coming. Make no mistake.
What is?
Something big. Maybe too big for the Batman to handle alone.
Why don't you just tell me what you know and let me decide what the Batman can handle alone?
I'm not the only thing from outer space that's come to Gotham. But right now, I'm the only thing that can stop it.
Stop what?
Invasion. Alien invasion.
We learned that Jean can levitate things with his telekinesis. Through the conversation, he reveals that he can carry at least two people, which is immediately paid off. Episode. It's a lot of exposition of who people are, what people's powers are, and little breadcrumbs that are almost immediately paid off in the storyline here. As we learn, Jean does reveal at that point, though, that this invading force known as the Joining, which is basically just AI. Right.
Yep. It's
a technologically advanced species or being. It's essentially one mega computer that
it's the Borg from Star Trek, or right. You know, any number
sort of like Brainiac too, right? Like
right. Or yeah,
the biological aspect of it, I guess.
Yes, they're like the Reapers from the Mass Effect games. Yeah, any good sci-fi franchise has their super AI assimilating alien force out there somewhere.
Yeah. So there, yeah, it's by now it's sort of old hat, but here you're kind of bringing that into this Batman universe. And Batman, to his credit, does not blink an eye. He's interested at that point just to know what technology they are interested in obtaining. So he decides he needs to go see Lucius Fox. He and John show up to Lucius's home. He opens the door. And of course, we are well aware that somebody or something has replaced Lucius at this point, but Batman isn't aware. But as the door opens, he greets both John and Batman. And Batman says he needs to ask some questions. But before any questions can be asked, John kicks his head off, literally, and it's revealed that he is a robot. And we get the robot replicants, and that's kind of what we're aiming for here. Apparently, the technology is going to replace all humans with replicants. So we get a little bit of hard act, I guess, in there too, except for a different moral reason. This is for world domination, not just replacing humans to prevent errors from occurring. So a little bit different there. We get a fun scene where Batman and Jean ride in the Batmobile with the strapped in replicant of Lucius Fox in the back, holding his own head as they get back to the Batcave. And Bruce wants to see if they can reattach or at least rehook up the head to get some additional information as to just where the real Lucius might be, as well as additional plans. Batgirl and Robin walk in on Jean standing in the Batcave and sort of wonder just who is this? Why are they allowed in the Batcave? As Batman and Jean both question the robotic head that's now attached. It's kind of like that character in Futurama, right? Isn't there a Futurama character that's just a head? Is it Richard Nixon that's just a head in a jar?
And yeah, there's a lot of like wacky celebrities that basically get put heads in jars. But yeah, I believe the president in Futurama is Richard Nixon's head in a jar, if I'm not mistaken.
We get all kinds of like shout outs to sci-fi series here, both serious and comedy. So we get the talking head on the table of Lucius's robot replicant reveals that Lucius is still alive. They're keeping him alive for information, but of course there's a time limit on this and that his usefulness will eventually come to an end and they'll be looking to eliminate him.
Great danger.
I can't believe this.
Really? Because robot heads? Well, that's totally what I'm expecting on a Wednesday.
And this guy, just some guy waltzing into the Batcave. Didn't have a blindfold on or anything.
Robin, I think we should be focused on the robot head.
Lucius is still alive. You're certain?
If you're trying to nod, you need a neck.
He's alive. The real Lucius is being held at the Wayne Industries Sectory. We are using him for information, but soon he will no longer be helpful.
So Jean and Batman decide they're going to head back to Wayne Enterprises, since that was the last place that Bruce saw Lucius and believes that he might be still be there. We also, of course, learn that part of the plan of the joining, as they're called, is they're going to amass as much technology as possible, and so that they can take over the world. So where else would they go but probably Wayne Enterprises, who's developing all of this stuff. Bruce also learned that in that uncovering of these trafficked items at the docks, that the police believed that that things had been coming in and out for quite some time and trafficked by Wayne Enterprises. So it all points back to there. As he heads back to the warehouse, he and Jean together travel back again, leaving behind Batgirl and Robin to sit on the floor eating a pile of cookies, wondering just how many replicants could be out there as they look over their shoulder and see Alfred dusting off the robot replicant headless body of Lucius replicant. And they start to wonder aloud if perhaps Alfred himself could be a robot based on all the characteristics of the robot replicants. Alfred mentions, however, he's not a replicant and there will be severe repercussions to both of them should they attempt to kick his head off.
No more scones.
That's right. Absolutely. So this leads back to Batman and Martian Manhunter. It leads them back to Lucius, where they discovered he's been tied up. They break him out. And Lucius tries to warn them, said that he's not worth it, that something much bigger is at hand, as an army of space ships, begin to form and sort of come from the depths of Wayne Enterprises, breaking free. They line up sort of in a flight pattern, all looking at Batman. Thankfully, Martian Manhunter can levitate, if you recall, up to mm-hmm. two people at a time, and he begins flying out of the.
And in case you didn't understand, that's what was happening. He repeats, "I told you I could lift you and your best friend if I had to." Just really, like, you know, it's. I know writers who use subtext, and they're all cowards.
They're all cowards. Yeah, so he and Lucius and Batman do manage to escape, but as they leave Wayne Enterprises, all of the alien starfighters begin to leave and crash through the roof. And we see that it's basically at this point not how or where the spaceships are going. They're going to anywhere vulnerable. They're taking over the entire Earth. And we get our to be continued text overlay as we call the end of this week's episode. Liam, I will say, as we get into the breakdown of our plot scores here for this episode, at least not the entirety of both parts, but for this episode, I think there was almost too much neon arrows pointing to everything that was immediately paid off.
Yeah.
I think if you're going to do subtext, if you're going to do plot points, you got to give them some breathing room before they get paid off. This stuff just felt too on the nose. I did not like the dialogue like I said, it felt right out of Batman 66. And while this show was a little bit more lighthearted, I'd say at times than Batman the Animated Series or the DCAU Batman. It's not a comedy. There's comic relief in Robin and I guess Batgirl in some ways, but it's not. Bruce isn't the buffoon, like it's not the 66 Batman or even the Silver Age Batman, where he's completely not self-aware of himself. This is supposed to be a serious take on Batman, and the fact that whole dialogue about him spouting off about his knowledge of Martians, I just laughed at it. I was like, that's not good. That was bad. But I will say the rest of the episode, for what they had to do, you're setting up a lot. I do like, you're really hammering it home. I didn't think that you had to hammer it home as hard as they did, but maybe you could have set it up earlier in the season and made this the payoff, but really hammering home the idea that Batman isn't a team guy. He's having second guesses about being a team guy, which I feel like goes against maybe my recollection of what this whole season was about, which was you bring in Robin, you bring in Batgirl in season 3. And then season 4 is them kind of fighting crime as a team together. I don't remember too much acrimony or Batman second guessing throughout the season, so it kind of just feels out of nowhere. I know why, because the rest of this episode, and then you're setting up your next season, which is going to be all team ups between Batman and some other heroes. But it just kind of feels like it's kind of forced in and shoehorned in here. So overall, I ended up giving plot for this episode just a 5 out of 10. I know it's a tough task to bring in a brand new character. You're bringing, you're trying to set up a bunch of things, but it very much feels like almost what the DC cinematic universe did, or whatever you want to call it, the Snyderverse tried to do, which was jam pack all of these little things into a story, mm-hmm. into one single story, so that they could hurry up and get to the big crossover part. Without setting up the seeds, which kind of tells a story and makes it make more sense over a long period of time.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I like the overall skeleton of this. I like the way it's kind of introduced little piece by piece. You know, you see Lucius get replaced right at the start. You see this mysterious technology, this new detective in town. I like that they kind of thought up, there's always, as we've talked about before, there's always the two superheroes meet for the first time. They got a punch for a bit before they're friends.
Batman v Martian Manhunter: Dawn of Justice is what this episode could be called.
Absolutely. And so I think they tried to come up with a better justification, I would say, for why they didn't trust each other right off the bat, as opposed to just doing it. Cause I mean, we all know the reason, because it's cool to watch two superheroes fight each other. But sometimes the justifications for these fights are not always the strongest. So, and it does still suffer from that feeling of like, well, if these two just kept talking instead of punching, then they probably could have resolved this in about 30 seconds. But
yeah, I get why Batman doesn't trust Martian Manhunter. That's right. Batman. But Martian Manhunter can literally read Batman's mind. He knows, like, that's why
his justification being like, well, I was afraid you wouldn't trust me and you would capture me and turn me over to the authorities and then it would be too late. I guess it's okay. They tried to justify it, but really, obviously, the end justification is we wanted to see Batman and Martian Manhunter fight. So, and then it does feel like you're ramping up the scale. I will say the final little bit in the diner there where he says the word invasion for the first time, and you know, and sort of everything kind of grinds to a halt there. I think they try to put some weight behind that. It does feel like for this show, this is the biggest threat that Batman's ever faced. So they do try to add some scale to it, and I think they do a decent job of building to it. But I think like you said, Cal, we'll give our final scores next week when we cover part two. But my tentative score right now, I think I'd be sitting around a 5 as well.
Here we go. Yeah, we'll see how they make up for it in part 2. I imagine there's probably going to be a lot of fighting and punching. So We'll see if that makes up for it, because there was a lot of dialogue, a lot of dialogue in this episode. I did miss one part, by the way, that was very, very important that I also laughed at. And that is within the first 2 minutes, the dialogue between Lucius Fox and Robin. He mentions that he works on the shadow tech technology for Batman, which
that had to be one of the toy lines, right?
It's literally the name of one of the toy lines. Yep. I was like, they worked in the toy line. Way to go, guys. Yep, there's a whole Shadow Tech series. Great job. So let's move on to our next category, Liam, which is going to be animation and visuals. And as you mentioned, Dong Wu responsible for this week's animation and visuals, with direction by Anthony Chun, or Anthony Chan, if I'm apologize if I'm mispronouncing that. And then written by Jane Espenson and Douglas Petrie. What'd you like about the visuals anything that you I guess let's start with the differences, since we just talked about them last week. This visual representation of John Jones / the Martian Manhunter versus our classic DCAU look.
Very good way to start it. One, I'll talk about his alter ego first. We never got to see there is like a default Jean disguise he uses a few times in Comfort and Joy, and that I think is based on this Detective John Jones alter ego from the comics, but we never really got to see that. So I love the idea. It doesn't really fit, because the Batman world isn't like, so steeped in like a specific era of fashion or, but like it literally looks like he stepped out of like a 1930s like pulp, comic strip. Like he's a Dick Tracy character or something. He's got the overcoat and the fedora and the pulled down and the big strong jawline and everything. Like, so I love that John Jones, walking out of the fog the first time you see him, like it's so moody and so retro. I love that. And then, the Jean design, the first thing I noticed about the Jean design, because it's pretty faithful to, this series version of the classic Martian Manhunter look, except for one thing, and that is that we're covering up more of the thighs. He's got like a bike short instead of the underpants on this one.
Yeah, he's got the compression shorts.
That's right. And then I think that the capes, maybe the cape and the collar, maybe a little bigger. And then his head's kind of small though, right? He's got like a very pronounced and jagged jawline.
Huge chin, real Jay Leno looking.
Yes, absolutely. kind of a small head for his big body. He's like all torso.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And he's got real long legs, real broad shoulders. I mean, it's kind of the style of this show, right? I mean, they did do some changes. I think we talked about maybe the last time we reviewed an episode, there were some changes between the earlier seasons and the later seasons, where they kind of squared things up a little bit more and they were a little less angular, but the characters are much more shaped like, I would say like a, like an hourglass, like broad shoulders, tiny in the middle, wide at the legs, like is kind of how most of the characters are shaped, or an X almost. So this kind of fits that. I would say the more exaggerated features are a little bit different. The bike shorts, as we mentioned, but yeah, I think overall the aesthetic fits. It works. It looks like the same character you're used to. Just I think in this particular style or universe, I think that the adaptation is perfectly okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I think overall it fits perfectly within this show's framework. But as far as the big visual stuff, as you said, not a lot of action in this episode. You do get the little bit with Robin and Batgirl trying and failing to take down the thugs before Batman comes swooping in. I did like that sequence a little bit. And then you get the, I guess the majority of it is, as mentioned, Batman's flying around in Darth Vader's TIE fighter and he's chasing Martian Manhunter all over the city. That's kind of fun. I wasn't overly impressed with like the shape shifting, effect. It feels like a lot of like they'll cut to Batman watching him change and then he'll be changed.
Right. Yeah.
Which maybe that's a budget thing. I don't know, but, But yeah, I mean, I think overall, like, he definitely doesn't, you know, move. Like, it feels like Jean moves a little differently. He doesn't fight exactly like Batman either. So there's something unique about the way the action, I think, works in that final bit. But they're fighting like inanimate lasers and like a crane thing. So it's not the most action packed sequence. There's a really cool shot where they're like, they both take like a running start and then like jump down onto a building below towards the end when they're going to infiltrate Bane Industries. That I think is, that's maybe the coolest single shot of the episode of our two heroes in action.
Yeah, I'd say yeah, with the lack of actual fisticuffs, I think you're looking at that chase scene was pretty entertaining. I will mention the show does use CGI for its ships and vehicles, and they did the cell shading over it. You can tell, of course, when they're moving, the movement on those CGI ships always looks a little bit awkward or out of place. But overall, they blended them in pretty well. They weren't as much of an eyesore as I tend to point out. You mentioned it when we were discussing the plot, but I love the homage to the New Frontier scene of Darwin Cook's personification of John Jones kind of learning about culture on Earth as he's watching television, and that whole character kind of absorbs what he can through watching TV. And the fact that they homage that directly as his face keeps changing and then eventually changes into this giant cartoony dog at the end, I loved that. So you have that homage was I think that in and of itself added an extra point for me, just as an appreciation and a nod to the legend that was and is Darwin Cook. But yeah, overall there's not a ton a ton of visually interesting. I mean, the fight that happens at the warehouse is basically robots, but the robots, they aren't like mech suit robots, they're just kind of machines. So I didn't think that, I thought that was an opportunity for them. And maybe in part two, we get a little bit more exploration into what the joining, how it manifests itself in a different way. But this was essentially it taking over the manufacturing robots, it felt like. So it wasn't really that visually interesting for the battle sequence there in the culmination of this episode. So yeah, overall, I do think that that John, the chase scene, the Batplane TIE fighter was certainly a pleasant surprise that I enjoyed. I cackled at the visual of the Lucius Fox robot strapped in the Batmobile, like they put him in the back seat and he has his head in his lap. Very funny. I laughed at that. That was great. And the way that they framed that shot. I think the scene, even though the dialogue was goofy, the scene in the diner between Jean and Bruce sitting at the table and the way that they kind of cut back and forth between their faces looking at each other, and then they would do kind of a side profile of them both looking at each other. The waitress that keeps coming over and trying to interrupt them in their conversation. All of that I thought was done really, really well and really added to that noir hero feeling of what they were trying to kind of get across with Jean. So I really enjoyed that. Overall, a pretty solid effort. Nothing I think that stood out as being super dynamic or really incredible, but I did end up with a 7 out of 10 for my score for animation and visuals.
Yeah, I went 7 out of 10 as well for me. So yeah, I think it's there's definitely building blocks and some interesting stuff, but not a ton of action to sink your teeth into. But yeah, we'll see how this holds up next week.
There we go. All right, Liam, let's move on to our next part, which is music. And forgive me, I did not make a note of the music when you said it at the top. Who did our music for this week?
We have Thomas Chase credited with the music for this week.
Okay. So we talked about this when we last reviewed the Batman, when we did the Bane episode, and then in prior episodes as well that we've covered, but music doesn't play too strong of a role here, other than the sort of refrains that play to sort of punctuate a scene or punctuate dialogue, which is usually just a guitar riff that comes in. But I will say that they did, it did seem to be used to sort of accentuate in different parts. They did do more traditional soundtracking, I felt like, for this, for different parts. I think Robin and Batgirl, when they jump into action, there's sort of a variation of the theme song that gets played. Was this the same theme song from season three, or was there another change between three and four? I forget.
So season three on is when we had this this like dancey techno, okay, semi Adam West theme inspired theme.
Okay. So it's the same theme, but that theme was sort of homaged in this entry as Batgirl and Robin jump into action. You could hear the similar notes played in different keys and out of key. And then I think the refrain that plays throughout to punctuate the different dramatic moments feels right for this show. It doesn't feel like they overuse it too much, but it is effective when used. And then I think the battle scene, the reveal of the joining's army of ships at the end, as Jean and Batman are kind of coming to grips with the idea that this invasion has started and they're beginning to kind of take over the world as we get our to be continued. I thought that punctuated well. Overall, though, not a lot that stood out for me as a strong or important musical part. Not to say that it's bad. It just this show doesn't focus on that as much as some of the other shows that we cover. So I went with still, though, a 6 out of 10. What about you?
Yeah, I went with just a 5 out of 10, middle of the road. Yeah, I think they do add a little bit extra. But as you said, music is kind of used for these little refrains to punctuate the scenes. And it's not bad. It's just different than what I think we're used to with our main shows that we cover. So excited to see if next week brings that up a little bit.
There we go. All right, Liam, let's wrap up this week's episode with our final category of the week. And that, of course, is going to be voice acting. All right. So we'll kick things off here with a couple of the smaller voices in the episode. We had Alistair Duncan playing Alfred Pennyworth. So Alistair, of course, Liam, we've talked a bit. He doesn't have a big role in this episode, but we do mention whenever we have the opportunity to talk about Mr. Duncan, his portrayal of Alfred outside of hashtag my Alfred might be the very best. It's certainly in the conversation. It is a different type of Alfred than maybe the standard Alfred that we're used to in Ephraim Zimbalist Jr., but it is his take on it and feels very authentic. And he's had the opportunity to play Alfred in several different iterations and is always a solid performance. He has more of a comedic role in this episode, but still very strong. I felt in that minor part.
Absolutely. Yeah. I adore his Alfred. I think he's just fantastic in the role.
Absolutely. And we'll continue here as we go through some of our more minor roles here, as we also have Danielle Judovitz as Batgirl. Not a huge part for her, but definitely playing again, I don't think we've covered an episode yet that featured her. At least I don't remember us doing that. So her first introduction here, as we see her playing off of Robin, Miss Judovitz. Has done some other voice work. She was in Toy Story as apparently the burned rag doll. I guess that was one of Sid's hurt toys. But done a lot of other voice work. She was in Final Fantasy VII, the remake, Saints Row. A lot of stuff in the video game industry. But
definitely a name, definitely a voice. When you hear it, you're like, oh, I've heard this.
You're right.
I've heard it before.
Precisely. Yeah. So, I think she plays certainly a different Batgirl than the one that we're used to, I would say. She plays off of Evan Sabara, who's playing Robin, and Dick Grayson. We talked about him, Spy Kids fame, Spy Kids 3, The Polar Express, obviously a lot here with the Batman, but playing off of him, I think they have more of a sibling rivalry, it almost feels like, and I feel like their chemistry for that type of brother sister relationship here kind of works for what they're going for.
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely feels the vibe here. It's very much this makeshift family where you have like Alfred as the grandfather and Bruce is the dad, and then the two kids here that are always getting into scraps and always fighting with each other. So yeah, they play off each other very well.
Absolutely. Again, not huge roles for them this week, but as we mentioned at the top, introduced to this particular series in this episode is of course Lucius Fox, and he is voiced by Louis Gossett Jr., who is probably best known for his role. He was in Roots, he was in Jaws, and An Officer and a Gentleman. So
proper actor, like, yeah. Oh my good, like when I saw that name, I was like, is that the Luke? Like, that's just one of those names that I feel like is burned into your brain as like an actor when you're like a classic actor, like a Turner Classic Movies actor, and it's like, my god, yes it was.
He also had a pretty big role, it looks like, in the Watchmen live TV series for HBO that came out a few years ago also,
right? Yeah.
A as you mentioned, a recognizable voice, probably a character actor that you would look at and see, and you'd recognize him if you Google him. But I think for what he was tasked with doing, I don't know if they directed him to do a Lucius Fox voice in the way that in a Morgan Freeman style, or if he was just kind of directed to give his own. But I thought he put his own spin on it, especially if they were trying to directly homage the Nolan films. I felt like he differentiated himself at least enough and put his own spin on the character. I feel like his interaction with Bruce at the beginning, and then even at the with Batman at the end of the episode was pretty strong. And he has to play a robot version of himself.
I was going to say that might be the most fun part. When he's like when he's just ahead and he's like taunting Batman and John in the Batcave might be my favorite part.
Yeah, pretty strong thus far from him as well. And then we'll get to our main events here. Of course, playing the Batman is Reno Romano, well-known voice actor. We've gone into his credits many times. Lots of voice acting, Spider-Man and Spider-Man the video game, lots of voice acting work for different video games. Really a who's list. In case you didn't know, the narrator on the Curious George television show, also apparently the animated series of Curious George. So as I mentioned, dialogue choice aside, he gives a typical Reno Romano Batman performance, I think, for this show. I didn't find too many faults or any issues with what he turned in for this episode. He, you know, it is, I think, going up against, the people that he has to have chemistry with in this episode. I don't know that the chemistry necessarily shines through, but maybe that was on purpose. We could chalk that up to because he's mistrusting of Jean. They didn't seem to have his be on the same page, but I think it's fine. It's a decent turn in here for what was asked for the first episode. And even him trying to explain and try and wrestle with this idea of not wanting to have to rely on other people or especially work in a team anymore. I think as goofy as we talked about maybe starting the premise in this episode was for that, I thought he pulled it off okay.
Yeah, I think he does a good job there. And yeah, I think, as you said, the dialogue maybe not assisting him a lot, but yeah, I think setting up the idea of him trying, that's a theme that always comes back to a Batman that has a Robin, or in some cases multiple Robins and Batgirls and all these, you know, Bat family members that are in the comics and various animated cartoons and movies and stuff. Like the idea of him when the chips are down, he sort of, his instinct is always to go back to working alone, and you know, he has to kind of be reminded of that. So be interested to see how that pays off when we review part two next week. But yeah, I think he does a good job and playing off of our new Martian Manhunter as well.
Speaking of, we'll tackle him. We saved our main event for last. And that, of course, is a very recognizable voice. If you've
absolutely
watched any animation at all, it's Mr. Dorian Harewood, known for many, 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 many roles. I think in his acting roles, he was in Full Metal Jacket, but probably best known to us as the voice of War Machine, at least the second voice of War Machine. He also played Ron Troop in Superman in the DCAU,
and he's Riley in The Forgotten, if I'm not mistaken.
Absolutely. And maybe most importantly, he was the voice of Taft on The Tick. confirmed us. We're still gonna get Elseworlds April Fool's Tick review at some point, and maybe have to review that episode. But yeah, Dorian Harewood turning in a performance for this week. I love Mr. Harewood. I love his voice. This is just one of those things where I can't unhear War Machine, you know, as he delivers every single line. And they're just in the same fashion as I guess Jean does, or you know, in the DCAU, there's no differentiation between his alien voice or when he's in his alien form and his human form. So there's no difference there. And it's, I don't know. I would have gone with something else. So you're going to put him maybe in a modulator or something on his voice a little bit to change it up, if you're going to have that so much time spent in the human form. But that was the choice they went with. I love Mr. Harewood's acting. It's just hard for me to not hear him as the other characters that I know him as when he's delivering these lines. So I would say for what's asked, it's he has a little bit more emotion, I would say, than Carl Lumbly's performance as Jean. It's not as nuanced as Carl Lumbly's take on Jean. It's more of just he's talking, he's having conversations. It's Dorian.
It's more like, yeah, it's a little steely, like, you know, like he's a bad dude. Like he's definitely lived a life and has seen a lot of stuff, and he's a tough, like there's a little bit more like tough guy in his voice, I feel like, than
for sure
than Mr. Lumbly's take.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, I think for this week's episode, again, it was heavy on the dialogue. There was a lot more talking. You had a lot of exposition that needed to be taken care of. New characters being introduced, two new characters being introduced, in both Lucius Fox and John, of course. So, overall, I think everybody did a solid job. I didn't think there was one performance that stood out as really great. I'm interested to see how we balance it out with next week's episode. If I'm guessing that there was so much dialogue for this week's episode that next week's going to be super heavy on the action. So we might not get the opportunity to sort of move this number up a little bit. But I settled with a 7 out of 10 so far on my voice acting score. What about you?
Yeah, I am sitting at the exact same score, would you believe it, at a 7 out of 10 so far for these tentative scores for part one here. Yeah, I think everybody's pretty solid. I think you do have the levity from Robin and Batgirl, Evan Sabar and Ms. Judovitz, and then yeah, some a lot of heavy lifting by Mr. Romano and Mr. Harewood there. There's a lot of exposition to get out, and a lot of you know, a lot of moving parts of explaining, you know, doing a sort of a Martian Manhunter 101 with you know, he doesn't like fire and he's an alien, he could shapeshift, he could you know, and he's got telekinesis. You have to explain all of his powers and explain who he is and explain who the joining are and what their deal is and all that. So there's a lot of moving parts to it, and I think there's to make that not boring, considering how much exposition heavy dialogue there is a real credit to this cast.
Agreed. And that's reflected in our scores. We'll see how much next week's episode affects our final overall scores here. But Liam, so far for this episode, at least, I ended up coming in with a 25 out of 40.
And I believe I am sitting at a 24 out of 40 at the moment. So yeah, we'll be interested to see how that shakes out, if we go a few points higher next week for our final scores, or if we're sitting here. But hey, since we're watching it next week, I guess we don't really have to talk about rewatchability. You got to watch part one before you watch part two.
That's right. We'll make the final judgment in next week's episode as to whether or not you should give this one a spin. This one, I believe here in the US, the Batman is no longer on the Max streaming service. You got to find it on
it is.
Is it? Is it still on there? All right.
Yeah, it's on multiples, I think.
Okay. It's on.
And as we know, things disappear from Max every other day, though. But, yeah, it maybe more reliably is available on Netflix at the moment.
So there you go. Or if you have one and don't have the other and you want to check this out. So
always a good idea.
Very, very, very interested to see how things pan out next week, Liam. It's been a while since we've seen these episodes, but thank you everybody for joining us for this week's episode as we begin to wrap up. Don't forget, we would love your support for the podcast. There's a couple of different ways you can do that. First of all, check out the show notes. There are two links that we want you to check out there. One is to subscribe with a monthly donation to the podcast. If you feel like buying myself and Liam a coffee monthly, we would greatly appreciate that. There's a link to donate to us directly. You can also check out our store. There's a link in the show notes as well to that. Buy yourself a piece of merchandise and get something for your dollar. We appreciate that as well. You can also support us in a myriad of non-monetary ways that we appreciate just as much. And that is supporting us on social media, following us at DCAU Review. Liam was a little bit under the weather this week, but was still putting out content. God bless him. Follow us at DCAU Review, both on the website formerly known as Twitter, now known as X, at DCAU Review, and on Instagram. The algorithm loves us again, Liam. Our posts are getting out there. Maybe we'll see it reflected in our follower count some point, but at DCAU Review on Instagram as well. Liam, we will be continuing with The Joining Part 2 next week. We are certainly very excited to see just how this episode wraps up. It's going to be a fun opportunity to see just where Jean and Batman can team up. Can they work together? Can they survive and take down this giant AI wannabe, The Joining? Tune in next week, Bat fans. Same Bat time, same Bat channel.
That's right. It'll be an exciting conclusion, and can't wait to check it out. This is not one I'd seen in a long time, so that's the best part of these Elseworlds, I think, is getting to visit things we haven't seen in even longer than the regular TCAU episodes sometimes.
There you go. All right, but until then, I'm Cal.
And I'm Liam.
And we will talk to you on the next episode of the DCAU Review.
Bye-bye.